You want me to turn this on, right?
Yes, please. You're on your microphone.
Trying to be respectful of everybody's time, so I would like to call the meeting to order. The Orange County Human Relations Commission. I'd like to remind us of our mission, which is to seek out the causes of tension and conflict, discrimination, and intolerance, and eliminate those causes. And that comes in many forms, shapes, and sizes, but it's always good to sort of remind ourselves of the importance of what we do and why we do it. So in our new digs here at the commission table, I have to look right and left. So let's look at the activities of the last month of the staff in particular. In the three areas of police community relations, from the Sheriff's Interfaith Council to the Chief's Advisory Board at Tustin to Police Community Reconciliation Program, which is sort of the biggest piece of all those, our staff participated in different ways, leading many of those things. In the intergroup relations and relationship building, community outreach and presentation, they met with the LGBT Center of Orange County, possibly going to facilitate a town hall meeting for that community. And then Norma sat as a panelist, the Sheriff's Academy, representing the Latino community. Hate-Free OC campaign had our hate crime network. I think more than 20 people showed up for that to really brainstorm ideas about how to think about from reporting to prevention of hate crime in the year to come. The commission staff also participated in the state-level organization of human relations organizations, and they are very, very interested in emulating the Hate-Free OC and No Hate campaign, K-N-O-W campaign. And then our staff met with OCIAC, which is the Orange County Intelligence Assessment Center, to review the hate crime report. Did you want to say anything about that, Norma? About meeting with OCIAC?
So Don Hahn was the one that met with them and with the Department of Homeland Security. And it was really to share some of the tools and resources that OC Human Relations Commission uses to track and collect data. And then OCIAC also shared some of how they collect some of the intelligence around violence and crimes in the county. So it was really more of a meet and greet to try to see how, if there's a potential partnership there, and also to try to see how we might be able to improve the way that we track our data.
Wonderful. So it was an effective meeting on both ends?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. And then you met with some people interested in becoming commissioners and other endorsed activities from the Training Academy, Implicit Bias Training, which we'll get today, and the awards event coming up in May. So guys are busy at work all the time, huh? Excellent. Is Becky coming? Do we know her?
She's
lost?
Yeah, she was lost. I had to give her directions.
Okay.
She kept missing the structure.
Okay. So now is the time for open forum. And at this time, members of the public can address the commission. Is there anybody here who would like to address the commission? No? Well, welcome anyway, and glad you are all here. Let me suggest that we hold off on action. I forgot to let you announce. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'd like to recommend that we hold off on number three until we have a quorum, so that way we can take a vote on it, Gary. And if not, then we'll just have you present it at the end, and we'll put it up for discussion.
Okay. Item number four is abridged implicit bias presentation.
Thank you.
My facilitator is outside, helping find someone find their way. So can we move and wait?
Yes. Okay, we can go to item number five, the Executive Director's Report, 2018 Commission Meeting Calendar, Hate Crime Network Meeting Update, Sheriff's Academy Update, Awards Nomination Update, and Implicit Bias Training Update.
Thank you. So if you look at your packet, on page number four, I put together a calendar of our next meeting dates and instructions of our parking spaces or where we're going to park. So that's what our calendar, it looks like for 2018. So the other thing I have, I wanted to share, if you look at page 5, 6, 7, and 8, we provided wrap-up reports for some of the activities that happened in January. So the first one in front of you is for the Hate Crime Network meeting. This was led by Don, and he was able to convene 20 different participants from different organizations, everything from community organizations to someone from the Santa Ana Police Department who tracks hate crime or who responds to hate crime in the city. So the purpose of this group is to look at how can we collectively deliver a strong message against hate crime and hate incidents. And all of the partners at the table are people who report and our report incidents to us. So it was a great meeting. They had some great ideas on how to reinvigorate this group. In the past, they used to meet really often, but they haven't met but once a year to do the hate crime report launch, like for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So they reached out. They said, we want to see how we can come back together and what capacity we might be able to really strengthen our messages in the county of that this place is not, you know, not open for hate, but how more of a respect and unity. So they decided to meet every other month. We will be meeting at different sites in Orange County. So they'll be learning about each other, similar to the Sheriff's Interfaith Council. And coming up with the strategic plan for the year. So they have some great ideas on doing surveys in the community to be able to get a sense of what are the reasons behind low reporting in some of the minority communities, versus also trying to see if they are able to create a network that will strengthen the current campaign of Hate Free OC and what that might look like. So they have some great ideas. We're very excited that they're really willing to come together and they find that this is valuable and important. The other wrap-up report is on the Sheriff's Academy diversity training. And this was facilitated by Joyce and Dawn. I was participant here, but I was one of the panelists actually. But this time around we had 68 recruits. And they span every city in the county, LA and Orange County. And of course, if you look at some of the comments, the recruits really enjoy being part of the training. And I think the most valuable piece of that is being able to hear the panelists. We had panelists from CARE, the Sikh community, the Asian community, Latino, transgender, for PFLAG also, gay and lesbian. So they get to see all these different people and get an opportunity to interact with them. And if you look at some of the survey results, they really value and really like that activity. So it was, this training is something that we need to be very, very happy about and very proud of. It's really cool training. So the next one seems that it will be in April. I think I might be missing pages, or maybe not. maybe it wasn't included. Seems like we're missing our implicit bias training. Is it in there?
It's here.
Okay. So the implicit bias training, we just wrapped up a two-day training for the city of Mission Viejo. So we trained about 50 to 60 city employees, all within the manager, director, supervisor category. And it was really a very good training. We had some amazing feedback that's really helped us even improve some of our...
We'll get a taste of it.
Yeah, you'll get a little, very, very small taste of what we did there. The trainings were 6 hours long. Mm-hmm. So that it has different modules. And if you look at some of the comments, you know, they said, you know, thank you, great training, very thought-provoking. I enjoyed the mix of discussion, lecture, group activities.
And Norma, do they pay for that, or is that just a service we provide as a county agent?
It's a service that we provide.
Excellent.
So there's everything from definitions to... It's really a self journey, and you'll be able to see some of how we do that, and you'll be able to see some of the pictures. So we're waiting to get feedback from the city manager, since he's the one who reached out to us about this training. So we're hoping to hear from him on his what feedback he might receive.
Might it be an idea to have a little bit of an ad campaign to other city managers to let them know that we offer this service to the county?
We can.
We definitely seems can. It seems like it's a win-win in the sense that we're providing service to them, and then we're on their radar for other things, whether it's a hate crime, whether it's a goodwill issue, whether whatever it is, OC Human Relations Commission is alive and well in their eyes.
And just, you know, so... We're all aware this training was in collaboration with the council, with 50 trainees. Two staff members are not enough, and these particular dates, Don had other responsibilities to attend to, so we had to tap on a third person to be able to help us manage the activities, etc. But if you look at the last portions of that report, I wanted to share the survey results, because we do a pre and post. So we do a pre before we go to the training, post after the training, and it's the same questions. But if you look at the results, if you look at page 3, the shifts, and you can't see them in black and gray, but in color, you can see the shifts from where they first started when we started the training to where they ended up at the end of the training. Mind you, this is a very introductory training. It's not extensive. We're not HR, human resources experts. It's really more about bringing awareness of what implicit bias is, how your brain functions, and how you're able to personally pursue a self-journey of being able to kind of address those implicit biases. So that's our results for that.
Norma, how... many agencies can we accommodate in a year, like based on your resources?
So this the past year was the first year we launched this. So last year we served, we trained with Child Support Services, Families Forward, Laguna Beach, Column 5. So I want to say we did about 4 or 5 trainings last year. Mm-hmm. This year we have about 3 lined up.
What's the bandwidth of how many we could do? We do one a month? Could we do?
No.
So like maximum once every other month or?
If we look at our contract, mm-hmm. In terms of our trainings, we have, four. So we have 4 as a goal. To date, we have 8. I think that if we're able to plan it well, it takes a lot of time to be able to prepare mm-hmm. with the people who we might be training. So the first step is we have to do an assessment with them to really gauge their needs, mm-hmm. because at that point, that's how we tailor the training.
Of course.
And for example, Mission Viejo, they understood if it's only three of us, we can only do 30, 40 max. Mm-hmm. And they wanted a bigger group, so they had to split it. So realistically, if we look at it, I can say we could do eight, but anything, if we do one a month, it's a huge commitment compared to everything else that, right, that's happening.
Of course, if we had more staff, the possibilities could be endless.
Definitely.
To serve the county of Orange.
Yeah, I can definitely see this this training to be a very popular training, and the need from a lot of the agencies in Orange County wanting to take part in this. I mean, for Garden Grove, I can certainly see us being on board, and I'm probably going to reach out to you and try to get our agency on the calendar before it fills up, you know. Yeah. But I can definitely see the need growing, like, once the word gets out. So if we can't facilitate a lot of training, I don't know if we want to do a campaign, you know, because I definitely see a lot of agencies taking an interest.
Jenny, is my assessment right, though, that this is the exact kind of thing that is a service to the city, and then we're on the city's radar, who will then return back to us, whether it's the police chief or the city manager or the mayor or whomever it might be, or the human resources director, right?
Manager.
I'm right. Yeah. That's a correct way of thinking.
Right, yeah. If we can target, like, you got the city manager, even, you know, there's organizations that's out there that's kind of looking for these kind of trainings for their employees.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see
the
that
city manager reached out to the council, and they contracted with the council to do other types of services. Mm-hmm. I was a part of that meeting, and what I offered was this training. So from everything that he was presented, the training was the most attractive thing, mm-hmm, and we were so excited that he called us to do that.
Great.
Yeah, I could definitely see this taking off.
So just a couple other updates. The awards nomination process has closed. The nominees have been chosen. There will be announcement soon. And Don and I are coordinating from the commissioner's comments last month to have some of the nominees come and speak. So we're trying to set that up for April. And just a heads up, next month we will have a presentation on homelessness here. Unfortunately, Susan Price wasn't able to do it for us. Her calendar kind of shifted a bit, but I did get someone from 211 to come and do the presentation, and they're one of the service providers that holds the contract to oversee some of the commission work. So Karen from 211, who's the CEO and director there, will be here next month. And those are all my updates.
Madam Clerk, let's go back to number three.
Sure. Item number three is discussion and approval of recommendations for Goodwill Committee.
No signal. Here we go. Now, how do I get the speaker on? Down here?
No, if you hit the screen.
Oh, okay.
You can turn up.
Thank you. In front of you, you will see a draft that I have done. This is not going to be foreign to you because I've discussed it before, but I thought you might want to see it in print this time and make any revisions or suggestions that you have. This is based on my view of the Goodwill Committee solely, and I want your input, of course. First of all, I've just done kind of an overview what the motivation for the committee development is. With the profusion of negative news that Orange County residents are exposed to on a daily basis, including political vitriol, inexplicable and unpredictable natural disasters, evil human acts, and multiple terrorist events, we often wonder what this is all about. Is there a deeper cultural meaning or a spiritual message inherent here? Regardless of such speculation, it definitely seems to be a pivotal time to focus on positive energy and to move out of this dark space of relentless negativity that we experience daily. Various psychological studies support the idea that humans tend to attract the experience and energy that they give most attention and energy to. Although there are valid and abhorrent cases of hate crimes, observable bias and prejudice, and other aberrant human behavior, Orange County is not a hateful community. Our county is home to numerous intelligent, hardworking, compassionate people who are doing good things every day to make our world and local community a healthier, safer, and fairer place for all to live and thrive. Oh, this is stuck again. There we go. Okay. Second paragraph, the nature and role of the committee. And this, of course, is where I would like your input most of all. I'm suggesting that there are volunteers or, if need be, appointed commissioners to serve. They will engage in the discovery process, finding ways to reach out to the community and generate prospective nominations. The committee will develop script and pertinent criteria for prospective nominations. It will then be distributed to the public through various media outlets in schools, hospitals, businesses, and public government agencies. In other words, we'll spread the word and get this goodwill award out to the public where people know it exists. And then we can get some nominations from that. People will say, oh, my company just did this, or my government agency just had a mediation training and it went really well, and I want to present this as a possible nominee to the Goodwill Committee. Here's some possible criteria. Now, I'm expecting this committee that is developed of about three people to come up with some criteria, but I would like for the other commissioners here to also send any ideas they have for criteria that might be clearer or more extensive than this. But I have four items here. First of all is evidence that this person, group, club, medical institution, charity, or business has worked collaboratively and effectively to achieve goals and or performance criteria. And that, of course, pertains to whatever their business is. Evidence that a major obstacle of bias was overcome, whether it be racial, gender, religious, age, or whatever. Evidence of resolved major conflict toward each other, and that could be individual or groups. Elimination of hate crimes and incidents in the workplace through life coaching, counseling sessions, or mediation, where individuals reveal increased understanding and compassion for one another. And this could be a boss making a recommendation that people in a certain section of his company have really made headway in this respect. It could be an observed role model for cooperative, effective, and respectful communication and behavior already in effect, not something that has been learned recently, but something that can be a role model for others to follow. And then last but not least, unusual acts of courage, compassion, and good deeds. And we probably need to define that a little bit more. Good deeds could have a huge range. So we'll have to probably refine that a little bit. Objective of the committee: change the appearance of the HR committee by focusing on positive, supportive advocacy. And what I've mentioned before is that some of the outside public has had limited access to this commission. And what they have accessed seems to be of a negative nature. They hear of all the hate crimes, the hate reporting, and so forth. And this would give a positive shift to the commission as well. We are very positive, and we are very constructive, and we are very productive. And I want the outside public to see that, too, that we are doing a lot of good things. So the objective of the committee would be also to applaud and celebrate the inherent goodness in thousands of Orange County residents who are committed to making the county and world a better place for all. To balance the various grievances of the oppressed, shamed, and abused victims with the good deeds of benevolent souls. And that's very general, I know, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
So are you making a motion to create a committee to write this criteria, or that we have a goodwill award and the committee is set to figure out how to do that best?
The latter. That we create... Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Welcome. I bet now you got lost.
Well, now I know where we're meeting.
Go ahead, Carrie.
I did get lost. I apologize for being late.
I would suggest that this committee vote, this commission vote. We've approved in the past the idea we had at another meeting.
We approved the idea.
But this would be an official confirmation that the commissioners want to create this committee and that they're in line with the motivation and the objectives and the process, and that they would be willing to have this committee design all this in greater detail.
Perfect.
Is that clear?
Yep.
Okay.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Bekele seconds the motion. So let's have some discussion about it. People have thoughts. Becky?
When we say we're going to give an award or whatever, recognize the people that are receiving the commendation, whatever it is that we decide we're going to do it. Where are we going to do it, and how are we going to do it?
Those are the details that I'd like the committee to work out, because that's obviously a detail that hasn't been addressed yet.
Okay, because I was just wondering how this was different than the awards that we're doing.
Good question, a pertinent question. This would be more ongoing. It would be part of something that we did regularly, like every other month, might even be monthly. That monthly might be too much, but I suspect that once we get this out there, there will be a lot of nominees for the recognition.
Okay. I would just add two things, minor and then one more major, and that is, as the committee is formed, I think we have to talk about how the nominees get voted to the award. So, for example, in a public meeting, if we're going to be talking about who deserves this award or that award, it feels a little uncomfortable to me. So we have to figure that piece out, particularly if you're going to vote no against somebody who did a good deed. That's a problem. Secondly, the other thing that needs to be considered is staff time. That's going to be a big issue for us to consider, because if we decide to do that, then what are they not going to be doing? So that's something to think about. But the committee can do that. I think those are easy. In principle, I really like this idea, with the exception of the first sentence of objective of committee number 4. Change the appearance of the Human Relations Commission by focusing on positive supportive advocacy. Given that we just did the long-range plan, I think the appearance is that we focus on the things that I read at the beginning, eliminating the causes of hate, discrimination, and bias, and in addition, also celebrate the good works of the residents of Orange County. Mm-hmm. If that's our only focus, then we lose the other big piece of that which we are really bound to do. So I think it's in addition to that which we're doing.
In addition to. Yeah. If you prefer that instead of change, that's fine.
So, great. So I'll let the committee make that, but that's the one thing that stood out to me.
A clarification on that, too, on what you said before. I think the committee can do a lot of the discussion that you were talking about that needs to be behind closed doors, perhaps, and they can bring their recommendations to the commission.
Great idea. Norma, did you have a comment?
I just wanted to open the possibility or share with the committee that forms with this that there is a certain process, and Don oversees the process for the awards. So he might be able to put together something as what does it take to be able to market for something like this? You know, who's going to be collecting? How do they collect the data? How do you rate it? Just maybe use some of what we already have in place for the awards, so there's no reinventing the wheel. So maybe
idea.
Some of those tools yeah. can be used and
great,
recycled.
Great
so maybe as we establish the committee, we could ask Don to be the staff liaison in those first meeting or two to help us think through that. Would that be okay, Madam Executive Director?
Absolutely.
good.
Another thing. I've mentioned casually to colleagues because they've said, what are you doing at the Human Relations Commission? And I casually mentioned to them this idea. And I have about four or five people who would already like to submit a company or a business or whatever for this recognition. And I think we also have to discuss what kind of recognition we want to give. I assume it's going to be some kind of a small plaque, and we'd have to consider the cost of that, of course. That's not huge, but it would have to come out of our budget somewhere to have somebody create this plaque and or create it for us.
We don't have Oprah donating cars?
Not yet.
And
not yet.
From our contract budget, we don't have a budget for that.
Is there any place where we can borrow some money?
Not from the commission budget.
Not
we don't have a commission budget that allows for that.
Okay. Well, we can address that also in the next
yeah.
round of
we'll
funding, which we should probably have an update on, too, to tell us where we are.
And that will be something that the new committee will have to work on, obviously.
Right. So, any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the establishment of this committee, please raise their hands. Say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed? Abstentions? Okay. So it passes. Thank you, Carrie, very much for your hard work. Really, really appreciate it. So do we have some volunteers who, Carrie, I'm assigning you as the chair of the committee, if you don't mind. Is there two other volunteers who might like to sit with her to work this through along with Dawn? Michael Reynolds, your brother?
Yeah.
In name? And anybody else? That means that Dawn gets to do it since he's not here. Or the chief. So we'll put out a word to them. If anybody else wants to volunteer, we can certainly make that. Becca, excellent. Okay, so Carrie, Michael, and Becca, along with Dawn, and perhaps, Carrie, if it's possible, to get a meeting in this next month to report back to us just progress in March,
okay.
How we're doing. I mean, I don't expect us to have the full program up probably till May or June, I would think, but let's see if we can get that ball rolling.
This will be fun.
It's yeah.
It's going to be really fun, good energy to be recognizing all of these people that are doing good things.
I think it's
making good progress.
Absolutely. I think it's a good balance to what goes on in the world in our county. So, excellent. Number four.
Okay. Back to item number four is abridged implicit bias presentation.
You change sides.
Hello?
You're good.
Okay, so Joyce and I are going to do this presentation. We were hoping to keep it within 15, 20 minutes, and as we reviewed our information, we thought, my gosh, we need 30 minutes. So we're hoping to do this very precise and very short. So mind you, as we shared, usually our trainings are anywhere from 4 hours to 6 hours. And you're only getting 30 minutes, so you're not getting the whole caboodle. But we'll share a little bit about how, what are some of the other activities.
Just touch it? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to figure out how the screen works.
Now, you won't be able to do the slides there. We have to do it from here. So, okay. All right, then. So we're going to get started. Look at that. Go for it.
So in this training, the purpose of this training is to for people to understand what bias is and the different types of biases that there are, and to learn individually, you know, what kind of biases do I have, and to be aware of them. So bias is universal. Everybody has them, and it's not to shame or point fingers at anybody. And, you know, bias happens every day. So when we start this conversation, first we like to create a safe space for everybody. And, you know, I start with for people to share their names and to share where do their name come from and what does it mean. So I hope that today you're able to share with me and go through that process. Yes, and I'll start. So my name is Joyce, and I was named after two great ladies that when my mom immigrated to this country, they helped her out. So my name is Joyce Susan Sanchez, and my name means joy. Okay, so we'll start with on this side.
So I'm just supposed to say what my name is?
Yes, and where it comes from, if there's okay. A story behind it.
Well, my name is Michael, and my dad's name is Mike, and Michael is an angel that's in the Bible, and that's where my dad's name came from. I think they just named me after my dad, not the angel.
All right.
Akala, that was originally from Ethiopia. Akala means mature. That's the meaning in my language.
All right. So, my name is Richard Michael Steinberg. The Michael in Hebrew is Michael, but I was named for the M for my grandfather Meir, which means in Hebrew, one who gives light.
But Michael's an Old Testament angel, too. So.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, that's very nice, the light. Hi, my name is Carrie Reynolds. My parents named me Carrie after the county of Kerry in Ireland because I am of Irish, Scottish, and English descent. So that was pretty representative of that area.
Hi, my name is Kim Tuan. Kim is like a goon, and Tuan is a family. Okay, so I come, I refugee from Vietnam, escape the communists, come here since 1975.
Thank you. My official name is Janie Hill Lee. And it was changed when I immigrated to the U.S. when I was 5 years old. But my birth name from Korea is Hyo Suk Lee. And Hyo means bright, and Suk means clear. And so bright, clear light, that's what my Korean name is. And it has like a deeper meaning that I'm not quite sure. But when I did immigrate, we all changed to an American name, and I have no idea where Janie came from, and the spelling J-A-N-Y, which is very, very unique. My grandfather just did that, so.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Esparza, better known as Becky Esparza, and I was named Rebecca because my father liked the name.
It's that simple.
What its meaning is, I don't know, because I've been said it's a Jewish name, but it's a different spelling, and then it's a different spelling with just the C-A instead of the C-C-A, so I am what I am.
Okay, so my full name is Norma Jeanette Lopez, and my maiden name is Hernandez, but Norma Jeanette, my second name was given to me by my godmother, and my godmother was a woman who actually welcomed my parents to Orange County as they transitioned from LA to Orange County. didn't have family when they immigrated here, so she was there all, and they allowed her to give me my second name. And just recently I learned where my first name came from. So my dad had a crush on his first grade teacher in El Salvador. Guess what her name was? Norma. So that's where my name comes from.
That's where I got it from.
So just to give you a sense, this usually is done in a circle. We're all sitting down with talking pieces, and that's usually one of our go-to activities, and how to be able to build community, break the ice, and also create a safe space for the attendees and the participants. We really want to create a space where they don't feel that this topic is as overwhelming as it is, and anybody who looks at the title can say, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm walking into. So our first attempt is kind of break down some of that anxiety through something like what you experience right now. So next, we're going to quickly review some of what we review with the attendees. So we usually start with module one, which is an overview about what bias is. We open it up usually and say, what do you think bias is? And we go through explaining that, you know, there's a particular tendency towards something, especially that prevents from unprejudiced considerations of a question. So we really kind of give them a sense that, first and foremost, we're all biased. It's a human condition, and that really stems from the natural way that our brain is wired, and it really is connected to our fight or flight response. So our first attempt in really kind of giving a sense of what bias is to establish we're all biased as human beings. So having said that, we're not pointing the finger at anybody. What really we're trying to do is create this journey for people to be able to look at how is it that some of these biases are formed over time. And in doing so, that's the first step in being able to address them. Because it's different from explicit bias. Implicit bias are actually formed from your childhood onward. And it's through your experiences. It's through any type of information that you're exposed to, marketing, news, the environment. So the implicit social cognition that comes, it's built on some of the attitudes that we develop through our interactions with people, through our interactions in the world. And it really does reside deep in your subconscious. So you don't know how it's happening. You don't realize. Unless you begin to start doing some of that self-awareness testing or self-awareness checking, that you're able to realize, or even it prompts you to think, hey, where does that thought or where is that perception or idea coming from? And it encompasses favorable and unfavorable assessments. So it could be everything from something that's really positive to something that might make you feel a little uncomfortable and you really don't know where it's coming from. So again, there are feelings and attitudes about other people that are caused by implicit associations. They develop over the course of a lifetime. And it's through direct and indirect messages. Usually with this, there's a couple videos that we show. We won't show here because we're short on time. But we close this.
Can you explain what a direct versus an indirect message is?
So indirect messages would be something that you're listening to, you're seeing, but it's not really telling you this is an idea that you have to form. So for example, if you're watching the Super Bowl, and there's a commercial that comes on about a certain car that, you know, they're selling, and you're thinking about buying a car. They're not directly saying, hey, we know that you're going to buy a car, but indirectly, it's actually priming you to think about what type of car you want, what color you might want. You know, you might like the Toyota over the Ford, or et cetera. So it's those type of indirect messages. And direct messages is really explicit in the sense that it's really it's making you think about how are you going to form an opinion. Is someone telling you this is what you should think about, or this is how you should feel? So that's the difference between those two.
Thank you.
So to close this portion out, there's a few characteristics about implicit biases and the fact that it's pervasive. It happens in our everyday interactions, and it. So at this point, if that's the case, then we're all on the hook. Implicit and explicit biases are related, but not necessarily. They're distinct mental constructs. So one might affect the other, but what truly is with the implicit is that it's really deep in your subconscious, and you don't know that it's there. So you can't really address it because it's not really coming to that level where you're conscious about it. The implicit associations don't necessarily need to align with your beliefs. But it's really something that you might have built and developed over time. And in this instance, for example, you might say, I like red and I don't like pink. But then if you don't really try to dig in as to why you don't like pink, then you really don't understand that. So when it comes to the implicit associations, is you're making decisions based on your interactions or the information that's been kind of ingrained in you over time, and your decisions might be impacted. And we'll learn a little bit later, how is it that your brain actually functions and kind of starts categorizing things and filling in spaces? Because you're either fast thinking or slow thinking. And when you're fast thinking, it's really taking from your subconscious to make those decisions. So we'll learn a little bit about how that happens later in this presentation. The last one is that implicit biases are malleable. So the first step towards addressing them is kind of the introductory. We all know that we have biases, and being able to start identifying those is the first step to really being able to to address those. So we're going to go in to types of bias. Everybody received a list. There's 9 biases that we usually actually go through and explain. There's usually breakout sessions in groups to discuss them and talk about examples. Today you will only be exposed to 3 of those because we don't have time. So I'm gonna hand it over to my colleague.
Okay, so right now we're gonna watch a brief video so you can experience one of these biases.
This is an awareness test.
Hold on, I forgot to preface this. If you've seen it, if you know the answer, please don't tell us what's happening. Don't ruin it for those who have it. Okay.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make?
Go!
So what's the answer? Did you see how many passes?
Did anybody count? What did you go?
10.
I counted 12.
12. Anybody else?
13.
13? 12? All right.
What is she?
The answer is 13.
Oh. 13. Oh.
But did you see the moonwalking bear?
Go!
No. Didn't see it at all.
That's not really a bear.
So that's a type of bias, right? We're selecting selective attention. We're just focusing on a certain thing, the one that we're interested in, without really seeing the rest, even if it's right in front of us, right? They didn't change the video. The bear was there. But since we were focused on the ball, that was your objective. So that was what you saw. So this is, you know, sometimes what happens when we're, for example, thinking about buying a red car. When we're driving along, you know, you see the red car and red car and red car, right? So you're selecting to have that attention.
So I'm going to have you all do a little activity. If you played this game, work with me, okay? So we're going to play Guess My Rule. And the way that we're going to play this, I'm going to give you a sequence of three numbers. And you are going to propose a set of new numbers that showcase the rule. So you're going to try to tell me what my rule is by proposing a new set of numbers. And I'll tell you whether it meets my rule or not. Okay? So this is your first sequence. 2, 4, 6. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Michael.
Sequentially increasing numbers by two.
No, you need to give me three numbers that would propose three new numbers.
Oh, okay. So 8, 10, 12.
It meets my rule. Anybody else want to try? And you said, what was the rule that you suggested?
Sequentially increasing numbers by two.
No, that's not the rule.
Oh, it's not.
First the numbers.
3, 5, 7.
Yes, it meets my rule. What are you proposing?
Increase by two.
No, it doesn't meet my rule. Oh. Okay, hold that thought. I'm going to give you a new set of numbers. 10, 20, and 30. Oh. This meets my rule too. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Three numbers.
Forty, fifty, sixty.
It meets my rule. What are you doing? What are you?
I'm increasing them by 10, an even number.
No, it doesn't meet my rule. Yes.
81, 100, and 3, and 1 million.
It meets my rule.
Ah. Yeah.
Okay. I think he's got it, but I'm going to do the other last one. 11, 12, 13.
14, 15, 16.
Yes, it meets my rule. What are you proposing?
In sequence, numbers adding one to each.
Whole numbers, integers.
No. All right, Rabbi, what do you have?
Any three numbers.
Yeah.
No. So here is the answer.
Are in ascending order.
All the numbers are in ascending order.
Yeah.
How does this apply to confirmation bias? Everybody tried to confirm through what they thought they knew was the answer and proposed the sequences instead of trying to disrupt or disprove the sequence. So you thought you knew. But in order to confirm what you knew, you were proposing the numbers that you thought were the answer. Instead of saying, you know what, let me try to figure something out. Let me give you 9, 8, and 7. That's disrupting my sequence. So confirmation bias is just that. It's how we gather information. We gather information that tends to respond or it tends to tie back to confirm our beliefs. So if there's in science, there's a lot of that where there's scientists are trying to collect data and their only focus is try to gather as much as they can that is going to prove that their hypothesis is true. And we just experienced that right now. Mm-hmm. So that's confirmation bias. All right. So next, we usually do this. There's a lot. a lot more to this about how our brain functions and things like that. But we're going to play a little, some mind games right now and see how you do.
I think, didn't I already fail? I mean, you're going to let me play again?
Yes. This is actually the module that really kind of is going to lead into how quickly your mind and your brain works and makes decisions and actually perceives, depending on the filters that you have based on your experiences, et cetera, what is it that you're seeing? But not only that, but how media and how other sources and information can actually prime you and start thinking about certain things in a certain way rather than actually trying to have your own frame of thinking. So
does everybody see in this image a face?
Yes.
Yes?
You are all able to see a face?
Who can't see a face here? Okay. All right. Let's try this.
Do you see the man's face in the mask? If you still don't see it, here it is. Okay, let's take another look. This is the exact same image as...
Sorry.
Here it is. Okay, let's take another look. This is the exact same image as before, but this time, do you see the kissing couple?
Yep.
Do you see the kissing... Who sees the couple? Raise your hand. Okay.
If you do, we just successfully primed it. By telling you that there are two kissing faces here, we made your brain see this instead of the single face. First, we told you to look for a face, and you saw a face. Then we told you about the kissing couple, and one face became two. That's priming.
So that's just another example of another bias. You want to talk about that?
So it's a bias, right? Because, for example, if you were watching a soccer game on TV, what is this that priming you to do? Maybe it primes you to want to go outside and play soccer or so. So messages that are being sent without you really knowing. So it's the tendency to respond to something based on expectations. So if I tell you, for example, did you see that black dress or that black jacket? That jacket might not be black, but because I'm telling you it's black, it might be navy blue. But it's your brain is working so fast that you're being primed to what I'm saying.
So the thing about priming is that you don't know it's happening, and you don't know how it's happening, and it's happening every single day. The challenge with this is that it's everywhere in anything that we do, and it really is based on some of the mental lenses. And can someone tell me what industry thrives on priming?
Advertising.
Yeah. Advertising. So they know how to work our brains to be able to, you know, you're looking at some shoes that you want to buy on Amazon, and then you're like, they're too expensive, I'm not going to look at that. And then you go to your Facebook page, and what's on the right of your feed? The shoes you were looking at. It keeps popping up everywhere. So there's all these different marketing efforts that really kind of hone in on this and being able to kind of wire your brain to constantly see that. So finally, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I need those, even though you really don't. So the final module is really about kind of how your brain works and what are some of the areas that your brain begins to trigger when you're making decisions. So we're going to see a video that... it's going to kind of showcase the two system in our brain, the slow and fast thinking. And before we kind of jump into that, it's kind of reminding us that we're making decisions every day. And not only that, but that, you know, you're going to the grocery store and you have an aisle full of cereals to choose from. Or that, you know, you're looking at your GPS and it's giving you an alternate route. Should I take it? But then what about those times when it's about your safety? You know, what do you do if you're kind of walking down the street, you're going to get off the curb and there's a taxi just drives past you? What's going to be your automatic response? Get out of the way, right? So, but you don't think that, you don't do that. And you don't stop and think, should I move? Should I not? Should I let the taxi cab hit me? It's an automatic response. So every day we're making these type of decisions. So we're going to show you a video on how your brain actually processes information and how quickly your subconscious is trying to fill in information, especially when you're trying to make decisions that are pressured or that are fast and you don't have to think about. You just kind of instinctually make a decision. So here's this video.
You may not realize it, but your brain actually processes information in two very distinct ways. Like when you look at this photo, you instantly know she has blonde hair, is visibly angry, and likely has some choice words to yell. Without any effort, you experienced fast thinking. But if you look at the following problem, something different happens. Sure, you immediately know it's a multiplication problem, and you knew you could solve it if you had the energy, but didn't. If you do try, your muscles will tense, your pupils will dilate, and your heart rate will increase. Now, you've experienced slow thinking. These two systems of fast and slow thinking dictate much of our perception and reaction in life. Take these lines for example. It's clear that they're different lengths, but if you measure them, they're actually the exact same length. Even now that you know, system one, or your fast thinking, can't stop seeing the illusion because it acts automatically. A similar effect is seen here. Which figure is the largest? Again, they're all the same size, but the suggestion of perspective and depth causes your system one to interpret the picture as three-dimensional, even though it's on a flat two-dimensional surface. It's making quick work of the available information, and so your conscious system two, or slow thinking, must compensate after the fact and choose not to believe your intuition or instinct. Want to see your system 2 in action? I'll show you a string of 4 digits, you read them aloud, then add 1 to each of the original digits. If the card reads 3795, the correct response would be 4806. We'll then go to the next card and you'll do the same, followed by the next card. Ready? Go. Few people can cope with more than 4 digits, but even harder is add 3. The interesting bit is that though your pupils would have dilated, you often become effectively blind when you fully engage system 2. Did you notice the color of the text change? Or how about the fact that the numbers completely changed when I put them off to the side? Listen to the following puzzle. A bat and a ball cost $1.10. The bat costs $1 more than the ball. How much does the ball cost? Chances are, your system 1 intuition was yelling 10 cents, but this appealing system 1 answer we know is wrong. In fact, the correct answer is 5 cents. Even if you worked out the correct answer, you likely thought of 10 cents along the way. System 1 is trying to work out an answer as quickly and seamlessly as possible, which is extremely beneficial in everyday life. If every activity required full mental effort, it would be exhausting. But knowing this allows us to understand that not all of our first impressions are correct. How many animals of each kind did Moses take into the ark? So few people detect what is wrong with this question that it's been dubbed the Moses illusion. In fact, Moses took no animals, Noah did. Again, our brain invests as little resources as necessary so that things run quickly and smoothly. Because Moses is not abnormal in the biblical context, System 1 unconsciously detects an association between Moses and Ark and quickly accepts the question. In a similar way, System 1 generates context without you knowing. Reading each of the following may seem fairly simple. A, B, C, Anne approached the bank, and 12, 13, 14. But your brain actually interpreted these ambiguous statements without you ever knowing. You could have read it as A13C or 12B14, but your brain created the context unconsciously. Also, you likely imagined a woman with money on her mind walking towards a building with tellers, but if the sentence before this was, they were floating gently down the river, the entire scene would have changed because bank is no longer associated with money. Without an explicit context, System 1 quickly generates one based on previous experience. In this case, you've likely visited more banks than rivers, and so the context is resolved accordingly. This ties into a concept called priming. For example, if I said wash, how would you complete this word fragment? Most would see soap, but had I just shown you the word eat, you'd be more likely to see soup. In this way, both eat and wash prime your thoughts. Though System 2 likes to think that it's in charge and knows what's going on, the truth is that priming effects have even been shown to affect and modify behavior. These arise in System 1, and you have no conscious access to them. If you'd like to learn more about the thinking...
So this is just a demonstration of how our brains are daily processing information to allow us to interpret, to understand, to operate, and sometimes to make decisions. And all of this is connected to implicit bias, because if implicit bias comes and surges when you're fast thinking, then there's really no control. You're not taking the time to say, okay, let me think about this. Does this make sense? It really does live within your fight or flight area of your brain. And then when you're in fight or flight mode, it's all about instinct. It's not, let me think about this. And the next video is gonna showcase a little bit of where is it when information is coming, and if you are in that state, how is it that it's affecting your brain?
So where does unconscious bias come from? Well, our knowledge of social groups, including stereotypes learned from a young age, is primarily stored here in the temporal lobes. At the sight of someone from a group considered hostile, information from the retina travels rapidly to the amygdala. The amygdala prepares the body for fight or flight and sends signals to the hypothalamus, increasing your heart rate and blood flow, as if preparing for a quick escape or a counterattack. The amygdala and other parts of the brain send signals here to the fusiform gyrus, a region that determines whether the thing in front of us is a human face. When we feel threatened, it encodes outgroup faces faster, helping us to react more automatically.
So this is just a very small snippet that really kind of showcases your brain's reaction, and especially when it comes to fear or threat. So the fear or threat of being the unknown, or just to give an example, growing up, my first exposure to driving was my parents in the front seat, me in the back. Every single time that an officer pulled up, I could sense that they always got anxious. I didn't understand, but they would always say, look forward, don't make eye contact, don't speak, behave. I didn't realize how that was priming me or how that would affect me until I started driving. To the point that one day I was waiting on a light, and I was supposed to go forward, and an officer on a bike, on a motorcycle, kind of stopped on my side, and I saw him, and automatically my heart started racing, started getting nervous, started getting anxious, and all I could think about was my parents saying, don't make eye contact, you know, don't move, don't make any sudden movements, and instead of having to turn where I was supposed to turn, I turned the other way. And it wasn't until years later, it wasn't until I started working at OC Human Relations that I kind of had to think, wait a second, where is this coming from? Why am I getting so anxious? Why am I so nervous? And I didn't realize that it was my parents' behavior that really primed me and to react the way that I did. Now, I try to wave. It's like, hey. But it kind of stems from that. I wasn't thinking or trying to process. It wasn't until later that I actually took the time to figure out, wait, where is this coming from? Why am I reacting this way? So we're going to close it here. This is just an example of our training agenda. As you can see, this group just got like one fourth of that. This is an example of the agenda that we put together for the mission vehicle training for 6 hours. So it's very interactive. There was an activity we actually wanted to do here, but we were going to run out of time. So it's really involved. What were we trying to do is kind of have him experience certain things so they really understand and make the connections and the associations to the information we're offering. So we wanted to give you a glimpse of the extensive agenda that we offer. And that's it.
Norma, how do police recruits, particularly young men and women, respond to this? I know it's a little different when you do it from Mission Viejo than you do from the police department, but same ideas, right?
Well, here's we wanted to clarify that point, because the training that we do with Sheriff's Academy, it's not about implicit bias. It's about cultural diversity.
But they do have an implicit bias at the Sheriff's Department?
I'm not sure if they do. Is it part of the L42?
I think there's different portions that they teach, so it might be one of them. So. But the part that we teach is culture diversity.
So this commission is aware we're not doing the implicit bias portion of that training. We're only doing the cultural diversity part of that training.
Let's add that to the list.
Yeah. So that's any other questions about the training?
Excellent. Really excellent review for us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for presenting that. That was, that was really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And next month is the homelessness presentation.
Yes.
And the month after that is the...
We're trying to set up for the awardees to come and speak.
Got it.
To the commission.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Item number 6 is update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
Seeing neither the Chief or the Sheriff here, I think we will skip that one.
Okay, item number 7, OCSD Interfaith Council update.
I wasn't able to attend the last meeting, which was at the mosque in, I want to say Garden Grove. I don't remember exactly where was it? Were you there?
Did
you
go?
Can you update us on that? I wasn't able to attend.
All right, I'm back. Okay, so last month the sheriff convened the group, and really it was to speak about what is the plans that they have, or set some agenda on what some of the themes and topics that the council was going to focus for 2018. There's conversations about the implicit bias training, especially in law enforcement. That was something that came up as an idea. So there was a lot of brainstorming about what this council is going to focus on. And they set their calendar for 2018. But the next month we are visiting the coroner's office. So most of what happens in this council is the interfaith community gets an opportunity to interact with law enforcement and speak about some of the community issues and have law enforcement kind of really give them answers and information that they're always able to take back to their own communities. So coroner's office was something that the council decided they wanted to do. They were going to visit. They have some information sharing there. But we'll have more information once we're able to determine what are the next topics they'll be focusing on. When they do, I'll bring that information here.
Norma, why the visit to the coroner's office? I'm curious.
Well, it's a good question on two levels, Becky. One is... the sheriff is trying to expose this council of religious leaders to all the different things the sheriff does. So we went to the academy one time. We went to the tactical center another time. We went to the jail another time. And so that is been really informative, mm-hmm. really, really informative. On the other hand, we're conscious, certainly from the commission point of view, that while we certainly want and do support law enforcement completely, to be an advisory council, you want to be able to speak truth to power, as it were. And so we're conscious about how to create an atmosphere in which we're celebrating the work of law enforcement, for sure, of the good work they're doing, and at the same time being able to respond to issues of concern, of bias, of whatever might be going on in the community. And I think the relationships are there for that to take place. But one person suggested, well, we're always going to all the sheriff things, then that sort of sets up a cheerleading force for the sheriff. But on the other hand, it's good for relationship building. And the other meetings are usually held at religious institutions, like we're at the mosque. There was going to be one at the Baha'i Center. There have been at the Mormon Church. There's going to be one at the synagogue later on in the year. So there is an equal amount of that relationship building that I think is pretty healthy. But it's a really interesting question, because part of the work of the commission is to be able to raise issues of concern, not just with the sheriff, but with anybody, so that we might be able to address our government officials in a respectful, thoughtful, but meaningful way.
Thank you. Okay. Next is any commissioner questions or commissioner announcements?
I can give an update.
Yes, so I'd like Norma to give an update on where we are on the funding issue of the future of the commission.
So early this week, I met with the director and his staff at the Orange County Community Resources Department. It was really a check-in. We check in quarterly, and it was to give him an update on how we're doing with our contract numbers, which we're doing really great in. But one of the questions I asked was in terms of our contract, and knowing that the council was given 1 year of funding to staff the commission. So that funding is up in June, at the end of June this year. So they mentioned that they have a checklist that they've put together of board directives. So some of the concerns that the Board of Supervisors has in turn of our webpage and some other items, and that they feel really confident that going through that list that we've been able to check off a lot of those concerns, and that they felt that the commission and the council have shown good faith. And so part of what they're trying to do is make sure that they have those briefings with the Board of Supervisors leading up to April. So in April, they will be proposing a budget to approve for the council to continue to staff the commission.
Great.
That's all I have.
Okay, the last is any agenda building for comments for future agenda items.
Seeing none?
Yeah. Adjournment.
All right. Thank you all very much for attending, and we are adjourning the meeting.